Okay, if we may get started, I'm calling this meeting to order. Do we need to do a roll call?
Yes, I'm happy to do it.
Okay, if you would please, thank you, Lauren.
Francois Avenue, Olivia Brandt, Andrea Copeland, Russ Cromberg, Athena Eastwood, Chris Engel, Emily Kilroy, Bela C. Stickerton, Jennifer Lyons, Jit Galakwam, Danny Shea, Amber Smith, Brad Buell, Juan Diego Yates, Darcy B.
Okay. First on our order of business, we have industry presentation by Michael Joy.
Hi, everyone. I'll be able to stay seated and try to drive the slide deck from here.
I'm going to move out of your way, so I am not interrupting your line of sight.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm the Associate University Architect at the University of Virginia. I've been there for probably 9 years this fall, and I'm just going to go. I know I have a brief presentation, but I have lots of slides, and so I wanted to just give you a brisk overview of where things are currently at the Emmett Ivy Corridor. And so with that, we'll get started. And so just to quickly situate the parcel of land that we'll be talking about today, you can see it highlighted in red here. It's a 14 contiguous acres just east of Copley Bridge, and it's sort of on the eastern end, it sort of catches Emmett Street, and to the south is Ivy, and to the north is the railway. This is a real strategic location because historically North Grounds, which really began with the expansion of University Hall, and then it was soon followed up with the graduate programs at with Darden and the JAG School and the law school, there was always sort of a disconnect where it went to a more suburban kind of typology in that North Grounds, and then you had sort of the core heart of Central Grounds. And so this parcel is something the university has taken decades to acquire piece by piece in order to create this direct linkage between North Grounds and Central Grounds. And so when we acquired the whole parcel, the contiguous parcel, this is what the state was when we took it. And so just to give a quick orientation, this was constructed probably about 12 years ago, I think the Emmett Ivy Garage was built, maybe 11. you have the Cavalry Inn was right up against Emmett. You have the villa here. This is the old Dynamics building. There's University Forum in the back. So it was, and 7-Eleven was over here. So it was, had.
Do you have a pointer? Cause you're
it's not coming up yet. No. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm pointing here and no one sees it. So, here you can see your 7-Eleven over here, Dynamics. And so, and there was, I forget, there was something like 8 curb cuts. And so in this master plan, we will go down to 3 curb cuts for the whole parcel. And so this was the framework that was developed to guide future projects. And I have to say, when this was adopted, it's been about maybe 9 years, roughly 8 years, I think, is when it was adopted by the board. We were really thinking this was like a 20-plus year roadmap. Little did we know that here we are in 2025, and everything but 2 of the parcels are spoken for. And so as you saw, there were 9 separate parcels. And so to give you a scale orientation of these 14 acres, the highlighted green area is the stream corridor that runs through. That is a natural stream that it was, I think, probably about 50 years ago, was buried underground. And so we are daylighting that stream again as part of a stormwater strategy. To give a sense of what the green is going to be like, it is a similar width to the drip line between the trees on the lawn. And unlike the lawn, which was high and dry, this is low and wet. And so you can see the stormwater is really one of the main sort of placemaking elements. And so by daylighting the stream, it has great benefits to the ecosystem, this riparian corridor, and it really helps as it works its way to the Chesapeake Bay. But you'll see there's plenty of public amenities that sort of engage the stream. And then the plantings were developed in a way that purposefully creates visual interest all 4 seasons. And so it's all native plants, again, and they are specifically picked to create visual interest, but also sort of help deal with the stormwater and mitigate some of the storm surge issues. And so you can see here, we're looking at late spring around graduation with pops of color along the stream. And then as we go into summer, there's additional sort of layers of colors that come in. And then going into the fall, specific plants are picked that even have interest as it starts to move into its dormant phase. And similarly, in winter too, there'll be little small pops of color along the stream corridor. So that was sort of the framework of what the possibilities were from development size, of what the building parcels could do, how high they would be. So it was really kind of almost like a zoning framework. The previous president, Jim Ryan, put together a task force back in 2019 to look at the programmatic drivers for these 14 acres. And so the three things that came out are this idea that it would be this node of discovery, democracy, and the arts. And so that sort of became the guiding principle as we looked at sort of occupying these spaces. And so this was a 3D rendering to give you a sense of the previous projects that had been sort of board approved. And so we have data sciences in the foreground here, sitting next to the pond element, which is where the stream terminates. It sort of is a retention pond that holds the stormwater before it works its way under Emmett and then heads up north on Emmett along the distillery branch and Meadow Creek. And so this large mass here, I'll touch on as we go forward, is the Center for the Arts. You have the Virginia Guest House, which is over here. These are the two large buildings that will, they sort of screen the existing Emmett Ivy parking garage, which has 1,200 dedicated parking spaces for this corridor. We have the Carson Institute of Democracy here. And one of the things that's not covered in this presentation, but data science will have a second phase that will occupy this lot directly behind their sort of inaugural building. As we looked at these buildings, you know, because it is a public-private sort of experience, these yellow elements are sort of destinations that are embedded within the buildings that go along public promenades, along the sort of edge of the pond. And so these little pops of these spaces are sort of the interactive spaces that happen in the properties. So you have sort of event space over at Karsh tying into the large ballroom, the restaurant. This is even showing the rooftop amenity, the perch up at the top of the guest house. And you know, event space here right in the main lobby of data science. And then there's an updated one that will show how this plays in with the Center for the Arts as well, which has a whole host of public spaces. This was earlier this summer. It was an aerial view showing construction progress. Since this photo was taken, the Karsh Institute is not only topped out, but it actually has about 2/3 of its exterior skin up. It is a white precast, sort of a man-made cast stone enclosure with it will have a brick base at the bottom. Adjacent to it is the guest house, which right now is nearing completion. It's going to have a target opening after the new year, with I think they have their website up and running now with bookings for May sort of conservatively available right now. And then looking here at the site plan, this is how this went. We went from the framework plan. This is where things currently stand. And so, again, just a quickly oriented view, you have Ivy Road at the bottom, Emmett running north-south, you have Copley Road here, the railway. So the parking garage is here, you have data science, which is visible today, the pond. This stream is currently being installed right now. Previously, it was just a sediment basin for the construction sites, and so that this fall is when they'll put the trees in, which are white river birch trees, which love to be in damp, sort of wet roots, and so that was specifically picked. And then over here you have the Karsh Institute Democracy, which sits along Ivy. It's catty corner to the Virginia Guest House. Their main entrance point sits right here off of Ivy. There's a large drop-off court. And then another project I'll touch on in more detail is the addition of 780 student dormitories for our second-year students. And so it's the phase one of a plan to accommodate all second-year students on grounds. So for those who haven't seen it, this is School of Data Science, very prominently visible from between Emmett and Ivy. It sits right at the amphitheater, which lines the pond. In the inside, this is the newest college at the University of Virginia. And so, you know, Dean Bourne was very keen on having this be a school without walls. And so you'll see a really interactive building that has an atrium that all the sort of social spaces and convening spaces all kind of intertwine around a big central staircase. And with the goal of creating spaces that will set our students up for success as they move beyond the university. And then there's this great sort of way to engage the landscape at the upper portion of the building. There's a terrace looking back to Central Grounds. So the Virginia Guest House, which again is coming together. This is, we just arrived at the garage at the lower entry. We're immediately adjacent to Counter Cafe, which is the name of the grab and go coffee shop, which is right behind this glass curtain wall. There is a servery area. There's going to be soft seating, cafe tables. It got its name, the counter, because it is wrapped with a counter in the all of the exterior windows. So this idea of being together alone, where someone who could come as a guest could sort of be in a public space, but also sort of enjoy the views out and along that counter space. Up above it, you have the restaurant, which is Poplar, and so that's its outdoor dining terrace. And then above that, you have an outdoor space that's adjacent to our boardroom, which is kind of one of the key spaces in the conference facility. So along that south side is our main promenade. This is a 20-foot wide pathway that sort of takes people from the Center for the Arts to the garage, past the hotel, up a monumental set of stairs that takes you right to Karsh. This is all cast right now. It's really exciting. The stairs are really beautiful. And there's a southern promenade, too, that sort of allows a similar pathway that connects to the parcels that are along Ivy. You can see this in the foreground here. A nice little sort of amenity is this 20 feet also doubles as our fire lane in case of emergency. And so this outdoor, this is called a porch is what it's referred to. It is a cantilever wood deck that sort of puts you into the stream that has cafe tables and chairs for people to sit at, which is, again, immediately adjacent from the counter cafe. As you work your way up to the upper reach of the Emmett Ivy corridor, you have the main entrance. This is the porte cochere going into the Virginia Guest House. We have 214 rooms. We have just under 30,000 square feet of conference center space with a sort of primary ballroom that can seat anywhere from 500 to 600 guests. And some interesting things is these upper four stories are the guest rooms. You have this link here between the sort of entry pavilion and the rest. These are interactive social spaces just for guests. And so they're little library areas for conference goers who may or may not know people and don't feel comfortable inviting it back to their room. This could be a place to mingle in a more public setting. Some other sort of just glimpses of some of the main destinations. We have, again, this top left, the two top images are the perch. This is our rooftop amenity. And so these photos are actually taken from a drone. So these are not sort of doctored. These are the views you see looking back to Lewis Mountain. And it's really striking. I think this is, I think everyone's excited to see this one come together. So you have about a third of it is outside terrace space. We have these retractable awnings that will keep the summer sun off guests. We have integrated heaters to warm them in the winter, and then the inside sort of carries that sort of fabric motif, and this is sort of a nice sort of a collection of cafe tables and lounge chairs. In the bottom, you have the living room and the counter cafe on the right, and so the living room is seen as space that could double. There is two meeting rooms right off of, this is on the lowest floor along the stream corridor. This could double as pre-function space for meetings. The idea is that these are sort of extra meeting spaces that could work concurrently with a large conference happening up on the second floor. And so this is sort of extra space where we see a lot of opportunities either for the community or student groups or even other sort of areas that want to have meeting space but don't necessarily need the whole conference center. So now we're jumping to Karsh, just a quick overview of this project. So just the relationship, these are sketches from our design architects at Howler & Yoon. And so they were sort of looking at the sort of the purposeful introverted idea behind Jefferson's Lawn with this idea of bringing together the sense of community, engaging the landscape, but it was kind of sort of a sense of kind of man's sort of mastery of the landscape and sort of perfecting it. And this one is sort of much more of a permeable, more public one that sort of works in concert with some of the natural systems of the landscape. And so it's an interesting corollary. And then you have, you know, when we were looking at how to embark on designing something like the Karsh Institute of Democracy, we didn't lose sight of some of the specific dates. So, you know, 200 years ago, the rotunda was completed, you know, and then the idea 200 years from now, what would sort of one of the key buildings look like at UVA? And so what is this sort of thread of this discourse around democracy and education? And so there's this connecting idea behind the drum of the rotunda, which is the main architectural element that holds the dome room, and you know it is screened behind this white portico with the white columns. And so what's at Karsh is a similar motif where you have the white exterior columns sort of acting as a scrim in front of the sort of red toned drum. And so you can see again this idea of what this sort of connection that sort of connects these two, or the tie between these two key architectural elements. And here's a quick zoom in at the main entrance. This is really coming together well. The team is ahead of schedule. This is looking at opening next summer. You have a beautiful sort of grand staircase adjoining elevator banks right when you come in with some amphitheater seating. The main auditorium is elevated to the second floor in a similar way the dome room is elevated off the main entry. You know, little nods to the very beautiful sort of curvilinear stairs at the rotunda are sort of echoed in this this sort of sculptural stair in the lobby. You can see some of the wood material of the dome room. The hard pine is echoed in these board and battens on the wall. And then as you move up, when you're standing in the main pre-function space outside of the 425-seat auditorium, you can start to see the echoes back to the rotunda portico. So here we go. We're heading into the auditorium. Here's the main sort of marquee space. You know, the university is definitely interested working with Karsh and working with the operators of the hotel for synergies between this particular space and the ballroom, and see what opportunities there are to help attract programming for both buildings. And then here we are at the outside. So this is actually right at the entrance of the hotel. So it's a really prominent architectural feature that I think elevates the lobby experience in the hotel. And the hotel has these very large apertures of glass looking out, and it's very dramatic.
So Michael, is that what you said? The bottom half is brick.
It is, yeah.
Is that painted brick?
No, it's white brick.
Okay.
And it's all hand laid, and it's in a corduroy pattern, but it's all sort of curving. So they're oh, referred wow. to as the cornerstones,
yeah.
And you can kind of get a glimpse of some of the shadows. So there's a certain softness to it that's supposed to help sort of make the building more inviting. So mm-hmm. that was the intention behind it. And as we come around, I'm just going to give you a quick overview of the housing, the second-year housing. And so this is set up along the spine. So one of the really nice elements is we have our glass lobby at the hotel, and at the other end of this event lawn, you have a glass pavilion that marks the sort of the primary dining facility for that group of students. This is now coming back out to, we are in Ivy looking at the more kind of urban entrance, and so this has a grab and go and a coffee shop right here. It's definitely, it's through the student plan, it's open to the public, but it's not an external vendor, it's through Aramark. Up above it are study spaces for all of the student floors. And then as you head over Copley Bridge, some significant improvements are being made to the public realm where currently you walk along the curb edge and it's a 6-foot wide sidewalk. We are sliding the sidewalk in, restoring a tree-lined edge so it gives better protection for the pedestrians as they head over. And we're looking to expand the existing
working. I didn't get that. Could you try again?
I'll try again. All right. We're going to work with VDOT to extend the existing sidewalk that goes over Copley Bridge as well, knowing that this will be a really primary artery on event days for athletics, either going to Scott Stadium or folks going to John Paul Jones Arena. And then here we are looking across that event lawn at that sort of white columns with the main dining pavilion at the end. You have student rooms up above. It's another shot of it, so the outdoor sort of seating there. So again, the thought is to sort of really engage the landscape in a way that helps drive sort of engagement, not only to the beautiful natural environment, but also sort of engage with each other and with the public and with the wide range of programming that's here. And so here now we're jumping to a very brief glimpse to the Center for the Arts. We're hoping to show more of this later this fall. You can see its primary component is a 1,200-seat auditorium that's directly accessible off of the promenade. That also connects to the museums, which will be the Kluge, Rue, and the Franklin coming together in purpose-built gallery space. And then in between these two sort of museums and the PAC will be the Department of Music, which is currently in Old Cattle Hall. And so you get this sort of combined stacking of museums, taking the western part, PAC at the east, with the music department sort of being the link between the elements.
And what's the seating for this performing arts?
So it's 1,200 seats in the PAC. That is, it's all functions as one building. It's in this blue area, so it's directly at the end of the pond. So it'll be very visible from a public standpoint. To the right of that is a small hall. It's a small recital hall. I think it sits about 100, and then underneath it is a place for the Charlottesville Symphony to rehearse. It's a place that's like, I think it can hold 300, I think, is the capacity for the recital hall. Or not recital, sorry, the large rehearsal hall. And then there's a dance studio. There's a black box, an experimental component in it as well. There's classrooms, places for, there's practice rooms for students. There is a couple other sort of more digital sort of music labs. And then up above it, you have multiple floors of gallery space, You have a multi-purpose space for community events with the museum up at the top. And there's places, too, to do engagement with some of the public school students who
so
come.
Is Cookie Roo relocating from their parents?
That's the plan, yeah.
Okay. Is also
yes, yeah. And I think that, I mean, I don't think anything's totally spoken about the Bailey building. I think there's always been talk of having it be sort of the main entrance of the A school. And so I know that's been a long-term plan, but there's nothing sort of actively happening. Same with what happens with Kluge Rue when they vacate as well, and Old Cabell Hall. So those are ones I think as this moves forward, conversations will open up about those three properties. And then here you can just see a quick cross-section through the space. It has a really dynamic stage that can be set up for either Virginia Film Festival, it can be set up for a symphony orchestra, it can be set up for ballet or musical theater. So it's a very adaptable space, and it's being tuned with the necessary loading docks in the back to receive Broadway shows, too. So that's it.
So the wings and everything within the standard.
Yeah.
Well,
so
thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Jory. Really, this is exciting. Makes you want to go back to school.
I think what's nice is a lot of this program is going to be...
This is also very public-facing, right?
Yeah, and I think even the Carson Soup Democracy, I mean, it really is, as a resident of the city, I think it's a tremendous asset, I think.
Huge.
Just to come... Game changers. Huh?
And there'll be a convention center.
Yes, exactly. So it's the largest conference space in Central Virginia.
Conference space, yes.
Conference space, so this would be fantastic. I mean, I assume that will be open to Albemarle County also?
Yes. It's meant to be, it's
public. Okay, good.
And
Russ
can talk more about the goals of the bookings, but I think it is meant to sort of be an attractor. And part of the reason it has its name, Virginia Guest House, is to sort of play with this association that it's a place that people can identify who are UVA, but also sort of Central Virginia. And so as it goes through the different calendar months, it can sort of be an attractive destination for different users.
And the capacity is how many?
It's 214 rooms, and that's a range of, I don't know what the total guest capacity is, because some of those are double queens and kings, and then you have, the ballroom is somewhere plus 500. I think it can seat 500 at sort of dining banquet style. So
this is something we've needed very much. Needed.
Yes.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's all programmed off of previous studies that were done. Was it Brailsford and Dunleavy who did that? Yeah.
I think it's the number's actually 700.
Oh, 700. Okay.
700.
I like to sort of just
For dining, and it's 10,000 square feet in the ballroom, so it's huge.
Any other questions, anyone? While we have Mr. Joy here,
I guess key dates, you'll see the guest house sort of was a soft launch in the new year. I don't know, Russ, if you have specifics on that, but I think there's just been some issues with some of the central utilities that sort of have sort of slowed that opening a little bit, and it's not a fault of the team doing the hotel. It's just the unfortunate reality of the central plant, but it's moved, but it's coming together really nice.
Like mid-March.
And are you still in the naming rights, or has the development team...
If there's the right price, we will name it whatever you want.
Yes. Karsh has a whole host of names.
Has a whole,
the Center for the Arts has
some. Emmett Ivy Corridor. If there was someone that felt strongly about calling that space something really nice, we would.
And similarly, I know Greg Hilker mentioned at the hotel, I think they were also idea that if someone wanted to name portions of the hotel, I think that is available. I think strategically, the university and their big campaign didn't move the hotel first because they didn't want to compete directly with the academic units, but it doesn't mean if there's someone who feels strongly about it could step forward with it. But,
right.
Because I knew at one point there was talk of having, there was going to be a John Castain Arts.
So the Arts Grounds now... John and Becky Castine
in front of
Arts Grounds, in front of Colbert.
Okay.
I think the main donor for performing arts is already set in stone. It's Tessa and
Richard Ader.
Mm-hmm. They're the lead gift, a significant gift. But I think a lot of the other spaces are still available.
And the Center for the Arts, if you weren't aware, so last spring the governor made a decision, given the uncertainty and volatility, he sort of put a pause on all of the capital requests for all of the higher education units in the Commonwealth. And so given the surplus that they're currently on, again, I think I don't have any direct information, but I think there's some hopeful optimism around the idea that a lot of that will be reassigned to, because they were all previously approved,
yeah.
And so I think it was, there's some hope that we'll see some movement, and I think it's referred to as the caboose bill, where the governor sort of readopts things into the budget. So, fingers crossed on that, and hopefully we'll get that going. But.
That's great.
Michael. Was there any thought given to an additional crossing of the railroad?
Yeah, so I was going to bring that. Thanks, Chris. So we, I don't know if you guys know this, but building over the railroad is really hard. what we've done
if anybody can do it, you guys can.
Yeah. So exactly. Here's the thing. So we've been asked that. So realistically, what the first goal was to try to strengthen and sort of enhance all of the existing pedestrian connections at grade. And so working alongside the city with the Smart Scale project, the goal is to really make that existing Emmett crossing better. And so that's, I would say it's about 60% done. And so hopefully as that sort of continues, we'll see a much better, safer crosswalk. Similarly, as we put in the second year housing, we are putting better connections up to Copley. We've improved the entire pedestrian way along Ivy, where it all meets ProWag standards. We have a tree verge along the edge, so you're pulled off. Similarly, we've enhanced the southern side where, again, the walkway, which, again, I don't know if you guys remember, there was, like, telephone poles in the middle of the sidewalk. So that's all been cleaned up where you have, trees sort of separating you from the traffic. Now, in regards to additional ones, the two that are of interest are, one is to run a bridge, sort of it would sort of piggyback on the existing railroad trestle, and that would take you back to Arts Grounds, so you'd have a direct connection from the Colbreth Theater to the Center for the Arts. The other one that we are sort of holding is that this existing elevator core and stair tower for the central, the Emmett Ivy garage, the way this doesn't show, but the way it's structured is to have a walkway that sort of aligns with this north-south access as part of the athletics master plan. And so the idea is you'd have to build a kind of tower of an elevator and stair bank, like elevators and stairs on the north side of the thing. That would make a direct linkage so people could go into the garage, take the elevator and go over. I think as we've spent more time living with this site and as we've seen the developments coming, I think some of these other improvements, I think, will maybe get us 70% of where we'd want to be. And the catch with these bridges is just it's the funding source. So I think everyone at the board level at the university all agrees they're important, which I know the county, I mean, you guys know the bridge going over 29. When you don't go from high to high, like if you think of Emmett, like when you're on Central Grounds, those high-to-high connections, are like with the new bridge we did for Contemplative Commons that goes to Newcomb, it's really great. These other ones where you're going from high to low, it's, it gets complicated to sort of accommodate. It's either, again, you're either putting elevators in or you're having to ramp. So, but we're trying to be bridge ready is with our planning so that if someone comes in and they're like, this is a priority, we're going to be ready for it. So.
And, I mean, Michael's not even touching on it because it's not really our project, but Kitty Corner right across the street from our student housing project is the other giant project going up the Bloom.
Yeah, that's a private,
480 it's beds, like 500 that, yeah. beds, 11 story or 10 story or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's about 3 stories taller than our tallest building. So.
Plus all the stuff off old Ivy.
Yeah.
That's right, plus the other housing down the street. So there's a lot coming into this area. So I think the infrastructure is going to be key for all this, the pedestrian movements and even vehicular.
Yeah, and then if you wanted to cast a wider net, this group may be of interest is that the university looked at why there's so much traffic on Ivy Road and on Emmett. And so there's two strategic projects that are to the north of here, and one is looking at the extension of Copley Road to Arlington and Millmont. And so that right now, it kind of curls around by the student development, the early childhood center, and takes you out by Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. If that actually went straight, you could get a four-way exchange. It sort of develops really great properties, makes it an incredible town gown economic opportunity. And it's fairly economical, that one. I think, so that one, I think there's a lot of excitement. I know Colette Sheehy, before she retired, that was something she was really interested in. We're hoping that comes back into focus. The other one, which is a little bit more of an investment, would be to a full four-way interchange where 250 with VDOT. We'd be working where Leonard Sandridge grows up. Right now, it's only a half of the interchange, and so if we completed that, we've run the numbers with some traffic engineers, and they would have a dramatic reduction on the congestion we currently see at Ivy. So Fingers crossed, I really hope the Millmont one can move forward, because I just think the synergy between the John Paul Jones Arena, all those mm-hmm. venues, all the food venues, the grocery stores, this new addition of housing, I just think that artery would be very heavily trafficked on pedestrians and bikes and everything else. So.
Do you know who will be the booking engine for the theater? Will it be?
Oh, that's a good question.
That will be, yeah, they haven't hired someone for, are you talking about the Center for the Arts? Yeah, they haven't hired like a general manager of sorts yet, but there will be someone in the arts department that will have their own booking, much like Karsh will have their own booking for their facility and their amphitheater.
Okay. Thank you, and thank you very much, and we really, really appreciate you being here. Yeah. This has probably been the highlight, because knowing what's
such a pleasure to be a part of it. And again, we had no idea when we adopted this plan that we would be, you know, within less than 10 years, almost have a full build out. So, there's two parcels that are immediately opposite the guest house, which are only four stories. They're lower, but those are the only two properties that haven't been identified with either donors or users or anything yet. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Small question.
Yeah.
The university also purchased the Foodsville Nations Shopping Center, right?
The foundation.
The foundation. Is there any talk about how that fits in with any of this, or is that way down the road?
Way down the road.
Because that's the private project that you were talking about in between the two. Right?
That's right.
It used to be the Truist lot.
We also own the Wells Fargo. Moe's.
Okay.
So we own
and that. The Wells Fargo across from the Bloom on Ivy. Oh,
okay. Yep.
Got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sad I'm going to miss what's behind the curtain.
Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Next, we have our consent calendar. Approval of previous meeting minutes. Do I have a motion?
Second.
Okay. Now, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Thank you. Next, we have our financial statement. We need approval for our financial statement.
So moved.
Second.
Any objections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Thank you very much. Next, we have our rebranding workshop presentation.
Yep. I'm going to let Amanda get set up. And in the meantime, were there any questions on the director's report that I had sent out? Great. So, I am disconnecting my computer from this. It doesn't look like it's the latest connected. There we go. Inside the director's report was the timeline for this project. It is an aggressive, optimistic, maybe, but a really tight timeline for how we can get this through. The reason for that is that we had always designed it this way, but in order to get advertising running in a strong way going into winter, we need to have this project wrapped up at the beginning of November. And so today, Amanda Carter from the Shred Agency is going to walk us through where we've gotten so far and where we're going. And we are looking for feedback from you all. This will be your opportunity to provide that critical feedback, because the next time we have a board meeting is at the end of October, which means that we will be days away from them being done. So let me know if you have any questions about that part or any hesitation as we go forward, but that is the timeline as of right now.
Yeah, question. When you said that's when they will be done, you mean we want to, in October, approve the final branding? Is that it?
So I am not going to bring back a logo for approval to this board. We're going to need to move forward faster than that. So if this board is not comfortable with that, we will need to call a special meeting of the board to do that. It is the role of this board to provide strategic direction, and it is the role of the staff to make sure that we're doing it in the way that you all see that. To me, that doesn't sound like logo approval. However, you know, you all are my bosses, and if that's what you need, that's fine. But we would need to add a board meeting into the timeline between now and the end of October, because we will not have the opportunity to revisit the logo by then. We'll need to, they're going to be doing a visitor guide, mobile visitor center rewraps, a whole bunch of advertising, ad mock-ups, so all of that needs to happen in the next couple of months to make their timeline work, and they're contractually obligated to complete this in 6 months.
But the logo, is that's calling CACBB something different also?
Nope.
It's just a logo for us.
It is okay. A logo for us.
Well, there was a presentation to industry that earlier this morning that I attended. And we, at the end of this, they will show you the four logos, and then you will give your input and then put it in here. So they look at everything.
Spoiler alert. Way to steal the thunder. But it's helpful content.
That's what I'm here
yes.
for.
No, no.
Okay. My concern is, though, you never get an opportunity to actually verbally voice your opinion. So, for example, Chris, highly unlikely, but he may say something that I'm interested in or change my mind or something, you know? But you don't have that opportunity because there's no dialogue amongst us. Is that the way you're planning on proceeding today?
Yes. And the reason for that is that trying to make a logo with 15 people around a table, it's not a great way, a use of time for everybody here. We also are not, this isn't the only group we're asking, right? So you all are, as I said, my bosses. If you don't like this path forward, we can change it. But we asked, we brought a focus group in this morning to get their perspective on things. We are going to have these four concepts as they are right now hit the streets with the mobile visitor centers from Wednesday through Sunday to get the public's input too. So we are taking your input into consideration. We are going to take the focus group and we're going to take the public and we're going to pull all of that together and come up with what we think needs to be the direction moving forward. If there is something with a strategy, and as you know, there are pauses for questions about the strategy throughout this presentation. That's the conversation we plan on having today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as the chair, co-chair also, I think we should reserve maybe the opportunity in September prior to October to have maybe a Zoom meeting regarding that.
We are not allowed to have
a meeting policy.
We can't announce it in advance? I thought we could.
We have to have a policy.
We don't have a policy.
We don't have a policy to have a virtual board meeting.
Okay. All right. Well, then we may have to call it.
That feels like something that we should just pursue.
Yes. We can fix that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of the bylaw review.
Well, then I'll make sure.
There you go.
There you go. Okay.
Not to point towards anybody. Okay. But that is part of the conversation with the bylaw review that will.
I just know that this board will decide upon the logo, correct?
No, that's what I'm saying, is that this board is providing the strategic direction. If you all need to have, or desire to have among you all, the check okay on the logo, then we're going to have to schedule an additional board meeting, because by the time we get to October, we will be beyond the point where we can approve the logo. Anna or Amanda, do you know what day we need to have a logo approved?
The rollout is on November. Hi, everyone. I'm Anna. I'm the new director of marketing and PR. It's nice to meet all of you for the first time. The completed logo rolled out is November the 3rd.
But that's not, we're going to need.
Logo approved is well before that. I'll go pull the timeline.
Thank you.
I'll grab that for you.
It'll be a lot sooner. So we would basically need to establish today that we are going to have another board meeting, because it'll probably be in a couple of weeks.
Okay,
we need to
do
have
a doodle
that.
Poll or something, right?
If that's the direction that the board wants to go.
I mean, I guess I'm confused. I thought the board would have final say over the logo, so that's...
The way that I interpret the operating agreement and the bylaws is that I determine the marketing strategy, and you all determine the overall strategy, and I present it to you all. That said, I have said if we want to call a board meeting so that you guys can check box the logo, we can do that.
October the 3rd.
October the 3rd.
Why don't we see the presentation today,
okay. Yes, sir.
And then regroup at the end of the meeting and determine if...
Got it.
Because I would agree with both sides. I think the board, we have the duty to make sure that whatever we put out, we are approving. And mm-hmm. I think whether it's you're getting stuck on a logo or calling out
a brand,
whatever it is, right?
Right.
So let's get through today's presentation and then see where we're at.
Okay. All right, guys.
There's no good place to stand in this room, so I'm going to try and hug the wall a little bit. But y'all let me know if, you know, if I'm blocking anything on the screen. Okay, so just to frame up what we're going to discuss today, it's a pretty robust presentation. But we're first going to cover all of the screen is shaking. We're first going to cover all of the research that we conducted over the course of June and July. And then we're going to talk about the insights that we garnered from that research. So basically, we're going to connect all the dots. And then from there, we're going to talk about brand implications. So now that we've connected all the dots, how does what we've learned shape the brand strategy? Then we're going to unveil the brand strategy. And then we're going to get to the real drama of today. And we're going to actually drop these curtains and unveil the logo concepts. And then there'll be, obviously, structured time within this presentation at different points. Basically at the end of each section, so presentation of research, then brand implications, to ask questions. So feel free to write down if you've got anything that pops into your mind as we're going through this presentation, and just save it for the question time, and we'll make sure we get it in. So there's definitely some structured points for that. All right, so let's jump on in. We're first going to go over the research. This is our methodology, just so that I can level set real quick. No one in this room, or maybe you did, attended any of the community engagement sessions. No one? No? Okay, all right. Just helps me understand how deeply we need to explain that stuff. So we took a multi-layered approach here to kind of tell a layered story here in the destination. We pursued qualitative engagement through in-person and virtual engagement sessions. We did 7 facilitated sessions throughout the month of July. There were a mix of in-person and virtual formats. They moved around the city and county. There were different times and different days of the week, nights, lunchtime, weekends, in order to really maximize accessibility so that everybody or as many people as possible could have an opportunity to engage with them. And then quantitatively, throughout both the months of June and July, we had an online community survey. We got 439 respondents there, and it was a mix of residents, students, business owners, and different demographic representation as well. So got a pretty wide swath just in terms of representation there. And so this is kind of the methodology we took in terms of our research engagements. And then I'd like to start first with the key findings from our community engagement session. So this is our qualitative work. First, just to kind of level set, what we asked respondents, people who attended the community engagement sessions, we asked them to make a community recipe. And essentially, we handed out cards that listed community values that you see listed here on the screen. We lovingly refer to them as community ingredients, and we just simply ask people to select the values that they felt most closely resonated with them in this community. And we had a long list of values, and then also had a write-in space to allow people to write in any values that maybe we left out. But as you can see here clearly on the screen, welcoming spaces and celebration and joy were our top two values just globally across all of our sessions. Stepping outside of that, one of my favorite points of the community engagement sessions was our community personality traits. So essentially what this was if Charlottesville and Albemarle County showed up as a person, an actual like physical being, who would we be in the world? And how we broke that out was we listed several different archetypes, personalities, and explained each one in the room, and over and above across all of the sessions, what we got was welcoming host first, and then bridge builder there as a close second. So what sort of emerged as we talk about just sort of the global responses we got was sort of this tension point about what welcoming really is and what it means to folks. We first saw this arise in our engagement session at the Jefferson School, which was our second in-person session. Essentially, what we came to was this sort of revelation after conversation in the room that maybe no space is intrinsically joyful or intrinsically welcoming, and a space that may be welcoming to me might not be welcoming to you or to someone else. And so it's about the people in the space at the time that makes it welcoming to different groups of people. And so this idea that welcoming spaces may not be universally welcoming first arose here at the Jefferson School. And after we kind of, after that data point arose for us, we then started to see it kind of percolate across all the other sessions, where we started to see this sort of aspiration versus reality gap, where 100% of the group selected welcoming space as a top value, but through multiple sessions, they began to then question if this was real or aspirational. We had co-facilitators, I facilitated, we did breakout sessions, individual activities as well as breakout groups, small groups, and when challenged, folks and challenged and prompted through different questions, folks started to question themselves that maybe this idea of universal welcoming isn't actually tangible, isn't actually a thing. And so here are some supporting quotes that we got out of different successive sessions stepping outside of the Jefferson School, but key among them, down here at the bottom, if we want welcoming spaces, we have to understand what welcoming means to me versus to you. So we're sort of like, all right, this is a little bit of a tension point. We're going to note this, set it to the side, and let's circle back and find out what our quantitative data looks like as it's reflected in our online community survey results. And so here's the demographics just at a high level from our community survey respondents. What we need to note here, though, is that the survey significantly overrepresented white, specifically white female voices compared to the actual community demographics. So I believe in our last session we called out the African-American percentage, I think in Charlottesville, is 18%. And as you see, we had 9% here. So we just, our survey responses just didn't reflect the reality and the destination in terms of diversity and racial spread. So that's just something to keep in mind. And then as we kind of stay in this space of high level, we asked on the survey, what three words describe Charlottesville, Albemarle County today? And as you see, they're kind of listed here. But what I want to really call out here is that you see welcoming listed at 11% in terms of how we show up today. And then as we step into what should our brand convey, our aspirational descriptors, how do we want to show up tomorrow, you see welcoming at 38% versus the 11% for current. So now we start to see again where we're sort of underscoring this aspiration versus reality gap that we started to see in our community engagement sessions. And so, of course, as I mentioned, our survey responses heavily overweighted white female. So we wanted to take a look at if we broke our responses out by race. And this is sort of a snapshot of what it looked like. This is how different racial groups see Charlottesville, Albemarle County. So this is our current perceptions, currently today, broken out by race. The key disparities here are listed on the bottom of the screen, namely that black respondents are 2 times more likely to describe the community as unequal, and 0% of black respondents used welcoming versus 4% of white respondents. It is not, welcoming is not listed here because we just took the top three for the purposes of this presentation, but it was there a little bit further down from our white respondents. And then, interestingly, our Hispanic respondents see more growth and opportunity. And just to caveat that word growth, which could be positive, could be negative, right? Growth could represent, hey, I see a lot of potential for me to grow and a lot of space for me to pursue my passions and become my full self, or it could be, you know, the community is growing and there's too many people here and I hate it. So that could be negative or positive, but a good data point to pull out for our Hispanic respondents. So this is just kind of how we broke it out by, how it broke out by race in terms of current perceptions. And then as we switch into our aspirational brand attributes, also broken out by race, we see that our white, black, and Hispanic respondents are fairly aligned, about an 8% spread on welcoming. Like, we all want to be welcoming, right? But then we start to see real division as we step into inclusivity and diversity. With inclusivity, we saw about a 16% 16% of our BIPOC audiences prioritized inclusivity over our white audience responders, and much the same thing we saw with diversity at about 13%. So the critical finding here is just that, you know, BIPOC respondents prioritize inclusivity and diversity at significantly higher rates. And this is about how different groups want visitors to feel when they come to the destination. So the emotional aspirations as broken out by race. Again, we see universal alignment on welcoming as the top desired feeling across all racial groups, validating that aspiration toward becoming a welcoming host, even if it's not currently achieved. And the key difference is here we see that Black respondents prioritize connected, 41% versus 25% of the white respondents. Hispanic respondents prioritized safety at 50% versus 33% of our white respondents. And our white respondents interestingly prioritized curiosity at 32% versus 15% of our Black respondents. So what we need to note here is that our Black respondents rated connectivity at 41%, much higher than our white respondents, suggesting the importance of creating sort of genuine community connections, not just a surfacey kind of universal welcome. So the belonging gap here is where it started to get kind of loud for the team and I. In terms of, do you feel like you belong here? As you see here, our white respondents, 89% do feel like they belong, but it dropped significantly to 67% of our Black respondents and 70% of our Hispanic respondents, emphasizing a 22-point gap. 1 in 3 Black respondents don't feel like they belong versus 1 in 10. There was a small write-in area under this question, and these are direct quotes we pulled out in terms of why they may feel this way. I'm not seen or heard, one Black respondent. I'm not white enough or rich enough, another Black respondent. And a Hispanic respondent commented that communities just feel disconnected. So as we start to layer what we're seeing qualitatively and quantitatively, the critical tension points reveal, like, it's definitely, here's the welcoming paradox, right? 69% selected welcoming spaces as a core value in sessions, but only 11% described the community as currently welcoming in the survey. So this, again, underscores that aspiration versus reality, what we want to be versus what we actually are. And then if we can take this idea of welcoming spaces because of this tension point, and also because of the fact that both quantitatively and qualitatively, folks who came to the sessions and engaged virtually or in person, as well as took the community survey, all very clearly knew that we were building a brand for tourism. So we sort of muddied the process just in that knowing, because folks want us to build a brand that welcomes others into our community, whether or not we actually have that universal welcoming authentically here every single day. And so that fact, coupled with what we've seen in terms of qualitative and quantitative data, really had sort of paved the path for our team to set aside our number one idea of welcoming hosts and us showing up in the world with welcoming spaces, as a welcoming host with many welcoming spaces, and lean into our number two, celebration and joy, as the consistent thread. In sessions, it was the second highest agreement across all the groups. We had concrete examples like Tom Tom, Fridays After Five, farmers markets, coffee shops as gathering spaces, and also personal stories centered on festive moments, really core concrete evidence to support celebration and joy as the consistent thread. And in the survey, events and festivals were cited as primary community strengths and celebration maker. That personality resonated even when not selected individually. And what that means is, again, as people individually were asked to select the personality of Charlottesville and Albemarle County and how we would show up as a person, then when we did our breakout sessions and went into groups and conversation began to happen, challenging questions and things that people hadn't thought of previously began to arise. And absolutely, after that conversation, what we ended up deciding on collectively as groups was celebration maker, as the personality that resonated even when not selected individually by themselves. And so the insight here is that celebration isn't just entertainment in the destination. It's how the community attempts to bridge divides and manifest its aspirations. I'm going to pause here for questions on the research and the insights.
I would just like to say is that thank you. Breakdown of African American community of color was excellent. I think that even though just my pulse on the community, that I think that you got it right. And it's good that y'all dove a little bit deeper and understood that in this community, if you didn't, it would have manifested itself at some point. And I think that you know what I was going to say, and that you ended it, is that these celebrations or these gatherings, tom-tom and soul seeker, different things, is where we try to kind of get the majority community to kind of see what the community is like in African American community, because I can't tell you how many people, you know, because that presentation we just had before from UVA, if you give it in a different community, they will look at it completely different. I mean, completely different. And so it's a whole divide of the community of color in this community on tourism, on UVA, and a lot of things, because they are going to be working and not really celebrating and walking and having coffee and things like that. They're going to be working in this coffee shop. So that is to say that I think that you hit it, at least for me, and I can't speak for the entire African American community, but I think I got a pretty good pulse on, you know, what they might say, and I think you got it.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Are you able to share these slides with us?
Absolutely. Cool. Yes. All right, so what does all of it mean as it relates to this? Go ahead.
Yeah. You had mentioned the community values in the beginning slides.
Yes.
That was community values of the residents, or community values that residents think that visitors want to see.
So in order to build an effective tourism brand, we have to have one that's rooted in the truth of the community. So this question was specifically aimed at what does the community value, and how does that show up in actual spaces and places throughout Charlottesville and Albemarle County. So it was about this place here and this community.
And how the residents feel in those spaces.
Yes.
So it wasn't visitor-focused.
No.
Okay. I had a question. Well, a thought was coming to my mind, because I was wondering where you were going with the welcoming, and then you got to it at the end.
Yeah.
It just took me a second to track. And then I'm curious, and I know you don't have the answer, I'm sure, but like, what does welcoming look like in another community that actually answers that, says yes, that we are that, we live that, we breathe that, versus one that's just aspirational but then says we're not these things, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then how do they get to that? Like, we're aspirational, but we're so far disconnected that y'all scrapped that one as an even something to look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it wasn't even close enough for us to even consider keeping that on the board, right?
Yeah.
It's so far disconnected
it was,
that we said nope. You know, that's just running through my mind.
It's actually interesting enough that we actually had a similar question in our last session. So this is what we do. I mean, we brand destinations and we do community engagement, and all destinations think that they are welcoming,
sure,
or at least want to be positioned as welcoming to visitors.
So.
That's the nature of tourism, right? And some can tell that story a little bit better than others. So think about a welcoming destination as a place that has robust diversity and is able to tell the story of no matter who you are, you can come here and you can universally be welcomed with arms open, no matter how much money you make, no matter what your race is, no matter where you're coming from. And it just didn't end up being authentic for this destination. But you can imagine, like, you know, like a melting pot, like a Miami or someplace like that may actually be able to plant their flag in welcoming. But no destination should, really. It's kind of generic, right?
Yeah.
But that's just an example of a place that might be able to kind of authentically tell that story.
Yeah. And you have to do what you're doing with the data that you're given. So as we make decisions with the data that we're given.
Right.
So like 500 plus responses plus minus out of the 150,000 people that live here.
Right.
You can get some trend lines from that, right? But I mean, it's also missing a lot of input, and that's the fault of the people that had the opportunity to come and give their and share, right? On no matter what side or no matter what their viewpoints are, right? So then we have to do.
You got to make decisions with the data
we
got.
Right. Yeah. And the trends we see.
Yeah.
We also thought that maybe the in-person sessions tended towards more welcoming because we could see their faces and they were having conversations with us, whereas it might tend towards being a little less welcoming when it's on a survey. You might skew a little bit more negative because you're showing up completely anonymously. So I think some of that skews, but that goal was still pretty big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in regards to that, out of the 439 respondents, how many were in person where you can see their faces and how many were...
The 439 online. Respondents was, that was the online community
that was the
survey.
Online.
Yes.
Do you know how many people came to the in-person sessions overall?
Even less.
I'm going to say
the solid number?
30 to 40.
Yeah, even less. It was very small.
Total? You think it's different?
Including the virtual sessions?
Closer
to 60.
60? Oh, wow. Okay, I've had it 29 then.
We had 20 at the last one. Yeah.
Okay. Good thing. Good thing you are in the room.
And so not for lack of trying. I mean, there's a robust promotional effort behind both the community survey as well as the in-person sessions. Ground game, the whole thing. Flyers, digital targeting. Yeah.
Well, in the city, the county, the chamber, and Friends of Charlottesville downtown also helped us out. They all put information about the survey and what we were doing in their newsletters, which was really nice. Mm-hmm.
My question, you mentioned your strategy, your approach is to ground a brand in the locality.
Yes, sir.
So 100% of your data points so far are local. You've not done any outside.
Currently, that's what we got to, but I'm about, we're about to apply it to.
I'm all over.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that segue.
Thank you. Yes, you're setting me up. Thank you.
Proceed.
All right. So, all of the learning, how does it have an implication on the brand we're trying to build? Well, our core brand implications, we already touched on this, we need to abandon this idea of universal welcoming. Our research clearly says that welcoming hosts is aspirational, not actual. So the brand implication there is that we focus on specific, authentic moments of connection rather than claiming this idea of universal hospitality. We need to embrace purposeful celebration. Our research says that every event here tries to do something. Our brand implication there is to position celebration as intentional, meaningful, transformative. We need to acknowledge multiple niches. Our research says that different spaces welcome different people. So our brand implication is that we need to promise visitors that they'll find their celebration, not a celebration, their thing. So the brand opportunity for us to really kind of carry the destination from this tension point to a really truthful space. The tension, we can typify it as, you know, we want to be welcoming, but maybe not are consistently. We want unity, but we do have division. We want inclusivity, but we also have inequality. And the truth is that there's always something to celebrate. Different celebrations welcome different groups, and through celebration, we practice becoming better. That's that aspirational, like becoming the welcoming that we maybe are not currently. And then the opportunity is to position Charlottesville, Albemarle County as a place where celebration is the mechanism for connection, transformation, and joy, helping to move the entirety of the destination, the community, forward. And here's where we get to our visitor research. This is the very expensive research that was done, predates Charette's engagement on this project, but we spent a lot of time talking to both past and prospective visitors. Just to frame that up, past visitors are people who have come to the destination and are considering a repeat visit. And prospective visitors are defined as people who have not ever been here but are considering possibly visiting within the next 6 months to a year. And so what visitors actually want clearly points to the opportunities faced. Past and prospective visitors are seeking feeling welcomed and able to be themselves, ranked at 88% importance across both past and prospective visitors. They're seeking meaningful connections with family and friends, authentic experiences that create lasting memories, and a sense of fulfillment from their travel investment. Therefore, our brand needs to create specific moments of genuine welcome rather than claim universal hospitality. If we are creating these specific moments of genuine welcome that people can feel connected to, it's saying to those people, we see you, we hear you, you matter, and you can be yourself here. We need to foster gatherings where visitors find their people so that we can create meaningful connections with new family, chosen family, and friends. We need to deliver purposeful experiences that fulfill deeper travel motivations so that we can meet the authentic experiences that create lasting memories need. And we need to enable transformation through joy, not just entertainment, which helps to make that sense of fulfillment from the travel investment that our past and prospective visitors are looking for. The research shows that visitors want intention and meaning, not empty promises of universal welcome. So we work to bridge the perception gap here. Amongst prospective visitors, and again, these are the people who have never been here, they tend to underestimate what we have to offer. The research shows that prospective visitors don't realize how fun Charlottesville actually is, the quality of dining and cultural experiences, the opportunities for meaningful connections, and our status as a world-class wine region. So, therefore, our brand needs to work to showcase specific moments that demonstrate fun with meaning, how fun Charlottesville actually is. It needs to work to highlight curated experiences across wine, food, culture, and outdoors to emphasize the quality of dining and cultural experiences. We need to work to tell a deeper story that shows substance beyond surface-level attractions, so we're creating those opportunities for meaningful connections. And we have to create this FOMO, the fear of missing out, sort of around intentional gatherings that are unique to our region that will help cement our status as a world-class wine region and as a place that's just got a lot of quality experiences. Every meaningful moment here needs to become proof of what visitors are missing. So in terms of unmet emotional needs, our research reveals critical emotional gaps for our visitors. Amongst past visitors, they need to feel that they are rewarding themselves. Amongst prospective visitors, they need to seek this sense of fulfillment. And so our brand opportunity is to position every experience as meaningful, not just empty entertainment. We are not a party city. We're not a party town. That is not where we're going here. It's about meaning and anchoring celebration in meaning. We need to promise transformation through participation, where visitors can actively shape the story. We need to frame visits as investments in joy and progress that are inherently rewarding. And we need to guarantee purposeful experiences that fulfill deeper travel motivations. Only 74% of prospective visitors believe Charlottesville delivers this, versus 75% who say these things are important. There was also a percolating, permeating affordability concern amongst our past and prospective visitors. Definitely not as heavy on our past visitors because they see value in the destination having been here before and having had a great trip when they were here. But especially amongst prospective visitors, we're gonna need to work to make meaningful experiences accessible, right? Our research found that affordability is visitors' number two concern at 95%, ranked as important by 95% of prospective visitors. The strategic response there is that we need to work to signal options at every price point through inclusive messaging, elevate free community events like July 4th at Monticello, Fridays After 5, mentioned that one before, but different marquee experiences. We need to show that meaningful doesn't have to mean expensive, authentic over exclusive. We want to celebrate multiple experiences from multiple budgets, from free festivals to premium wine, everything in between. The messaging direction here can possibly be the best experiences here don't require reservations or admission fees. They just require showing up with intention. So this is all about moving from this sort of functional, transactional tourism to transformational tourism. Here are the things that visitors are currently coming for: our anchor experiences, our historic sites, our local restaurants, downtown exploration, and beautiful outdoor scenery. And so while we still anchor those experiences, we can work to transform them into places where past informs progress for our historic sites, our local restaurants, expressions of culinary creativity and community, our downtown, the stage for intentional connection, the scenery, the backdrop for transformational experiences, so that every asset becomes part of a larger story of meaningful connections. Not just these disparate experiences that people come for the one thing and then leave. It's all about creating meaning and intention. Here's about, you know, touching back on this idea of a safe space for being yourself. We clearly covered this research, and the brand solution direction helps to acknowledge multiple comfort zones exist in our community. We can promise perfect matches rather than a universal fit. Again, you can come here, find your people, not a group of people. We need to be intentional about creating right connections for right people and choose authentic over universal, which is honest about those different spaces, so that everyone belongs somewhere specific, not everywhere generic. And of course, we have to take all of this and we have to apply it back to ROI and the Tourism Master Plan, which guides everything that we do. This brand strategy that we're formulating here can work to increase length of stay in a real demonstrable way. We create meaningful experiences, which is more reasons to stay longer and also to spend more, increase visitor spend. We get people moving around the destination more, stopping more places, they spend more money. And it's encouraging deeper explorations of our diverse offerings. It helps to drive repeat visitation, as 84% of past visitors were already likely to return, but now we're giving them additional reasons to return. So the different experiences for different seasons and interests help to balance out our seasonality. So we no longer have a peak tourism season. All year is peak season. We can have reasons to celebrate, to gather with purpose and intention all year round. This also helps to support sustainable tourism for the same exact reason. It distributes visitors across multiple experiences, locations, and throughout the seasons. And it helps us to celebrate community progress as opposed to just consumption. And for all of these reasons, this strategy is clearly measurable in terms of its success. So, the path forward becomes really clear now. The visitor research tells us that visitors are seeking meaningful meaning, not just amenities. Different niches need different experiences. Purpose and fulfillment drive satisfaction, and authentic connection beats universal welcoming claims. Our community research shows us that celebration is our consistent strength. Every event tries to solve something. Joy is our mechanism for progress, and intentionality defines our character. The research points to one clear direction: intentional, purposeful, transformative tourism. Both the visitor research and our community research. Questions there before we move into the brand strategy?
So the visitor research that is separate from the community research is who you interviewed here in the community.
Yes.
The visitor research is something take somewhere.
That was the Tourism Master Plan research that we did last year.
Okay. And then I think we do a lot. I think we're doing a lot in Charlottesville to cover different groups, to address different things. I mean, it seems like, especially Charlottesville, you guys have a ton of stuff compared to Albemarle, frankly,
sure.
And which I think is great. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm not understanding. I mean, we want more of all that. Is that correct?
More events and festivals? Is it?
No.
I mean, well, sure, more is always, sure, we can, but we have so many already. And this brand is, as we're about to continue to see, we intend for it to be about more than just events and festivals, celebratory moments, and as connection points. I mean, events and festivals definitely help to serve as almost like a bridge builder, because it lowers the barrier for entry for other people to engage with maybe different communities, different different values, different mm-hmm. traditions.
Right.
But stepping outside of that, there are reasons to be purposeful, to celebrate, to create moments of joy every single day. Small moments all the way up to big things. So, go ahead.
How does that help our tourism?
The celebration and joy?
We are trying to create a brand that speaks to a whole bunch of people simultaneously, right? So we're primarily reaching out to the leisure market, a little bit to group sales. We need to have a brand that quickly and succinctly tells people what we're about and brings everyone into a story. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've created that we haven't shown you guys yet allows for our different industry partners to be part of that story and bring them into what we're talking about right now. So the past couple of years, we have really hung our hat on the wine recognition, right? So we might have, you know, a community, somebody inside the tourism industry that says, well, I don't drink wine, or I'm not interested in wine, or my business doesn't serve people who are drinking wine. Let's say it's the Charlottesville Ale Trail. Like, we don't care that you've gone all in on wine. It's not helpful to us. What we have created, I believe, is something where all of our tourism industry partners can feel that invitation to the visitor and leverage a unified brand. We didn't reference the stakeholder survey that we did as part of the tourism master plan, but that was something that particular survey really called for. I want to be a tourism partner that's able to leverage the CACVB's brand to welcome people here for whatever reason they want to. And that's what we're trying to build towards. Does that help?
Okay. And our brand is not our logo.
The logo is just an expression of a brand.
Brand. Okay, because I didn't get from the first presentation what our brand would be.
Cool. Stay tuned. You'll see it.
It's going to be presented this time around.
Okay. We'll make sure that it's clear.
It's clear. Okay. Maybe it's clear. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Russ, did you have something?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, you kind of highlight some of the ways we can message this, mm-hmm. right? I think it's always really hard, and I'm sure you all know this, and we all know it. Affordable, accessible, those key words mm-hmm. will be something that our partners and other people, we as this brand and what the CBB does, can't really influence that. We can only tell a story to try and attract people to come here. And how you do that is going to take our partners helping with the programming and some of these other initiatives and things. And then also realizing, you know, that we want to be this welcoming for all, but we are faced with realities of this is an expensive destination to operate a business in. And then to what do you charge for people to come and stay the night or eat in my restaurant? Like, I don't think anybody wants to charge what we charge to a certain degree, right? Like, whether it's $500 for a hotel room on a weekend or $50 for a steak. Like, I don't think anybody wants to just arbitrarily throw the numbers out and says this is what we should charge. There's data behind a lot of that, right? How much do I pay my server? How much do I pay for this?
Sure.
But in Charlottesville, whether we all want to believe it or not, is super expensive to live, operate, do all those things. And so how do we try and be accessible to all, understanding we have constraints around some of that, right? We can't, I think it's just, it's a hard thing is what I'm saying, right?
It is. And I mean, tourism inherently assumes a certain level of economic status. Not everyone gets to travel.
Yeah.
And so that's factual, and I say that inside the community all the time. Like, we want to be as welcoming to people as we can be, but if you are a tourist, you have achieved a certain level of economic status, period, hard stop. And we aren't affordable to everybody, but we can be having a conversation that includes more people and make it feel more approachable than it might otherwise. And a great example for me, when I moved here, I wanted to go to King Family Polo. And my sister-in-law was in town, and I made all of us dress up. We were wearing dresses and heels, and it's like we were out. Because I assumed that polo was a high-end, fancy experience. Because that's what the movies or whatever had taught me, right? And then I got out there, and I was like, well, now we're just going to sweat in our nice clothes. But like, I think that's the kind of perception that people have, that you have to be a certain way in order to come here and act a certain way and look a certain way. And we're trying to make that a little bit less intimidating.
But their data tells you that the community even feels that way, though, too.
Yes.
So there's other messaging that has to change, and or programming and initiatives and stuff, right? Well, they go beyond us.
100%, yes. And very much appreciated that this is only, we can only control what we can control, and that's why we have a board, and that's why we have stakeholders, and if we aren't all trying to sing the same song, it's not going to work.
Yeah. Right. I think it's very interesting. I was going to say this for the end, but the Southern Living Idea House has opened. In 2 weeks, we've had over 2,000 people. We're only 10 states short from the United States. But we've had people come from everywhere except 10 states right now, including Hawaii, all over the board, right?
Oh, you're going to get there.
What's really interesting is who these visitors are. And of course, who the visitors are. So I met a lovely couple of sisters from South Carolina. They go to all the design houses. And I was like, well, where are you staying? And they were like, the Holiday Inn Express. And they were in for it. They come in on Thursday, they go to their house on Friday. They try to see the town while they're here. Then I had a group of 7 women who go to all the Idea Houses since 2009. And they make a 4-day weekend of it. They chose to stay in Richmond and drive up. And then another couple from Michigan, this is their 5th Idea House, they stay a week in the towns that they go to. Again, stayed at the Holiday Inn Express, but they also studied the town. So they were doing Monticello, going to UVA, had definitely picked out restaurants. They were very excited to go to Tip Top.
And
it was right around the corner. Oh, jeez. It was right around the corner.
Okay.
You know, they
was not what I thought you were going to say. I love Tip Top.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Like, we found a diner. We love diners. And again, they were from Michigan. They wanted to go to every diner they could. They were like, well, what do you think of, you know, they were asking me about the other diners in the town. And then there was obviously parent weekend. There were people from California. They were staying at Keswick. And just, oh, we heard about a house, we got to come look. So it's been interesting to see who's coming to this one event. They're obviously Southern Living groupies, which I didn't expect. I mean, I follow bands, so why wouldn't there be house groupies? Band groupies, so. But it's been interesting, and everybody's of a complete different background. And we had New York architect students that came just to look at the architecture of the house. Mm-hmm. And they quick trip in, quick gone right back to New York, but they took pictures of every nook and cranny of that house. And 3 people have bought the plans and are building the house. They're from Georgia.
And they're building the house in Keswick?
No, they're from Georgia. They bought the plans.
They're going to stay in Georgia.
They're taking bought the plans, building in Georgia.
How much are the tickets?
$45, almost $45.
But if you come and see me, I'll get you in there for free.
Maybe.
You got the key?
No, but I live there, so we can go in.
All right. Anyway, that's just to say.
But not in that house.
First, and,
well,
absolutely.
It's been very interesting. I love that. And wineries have been the other reason, that thing that they're going to do while they're in town. They're going to get a winery.
All right, so drum roll, please. All right, so here is how all of this relates to the brand architecture that we're building. We feel the strategic solution here is celebrate on purpose. Why do we think this works? Well, first and foremost, it's authentically true. It reflects what actually happens here, intentional celebrations, and doesn't claim false universality. It honors that visionary thread as well, sort of like how we want to be, how we want to show up tomorrow. It's also differentiated. It's a unique stance in a very competitive tourism landscape. No other destination owns this positioning, not regionally or anywhere else. It is tourism compelling, promises those meaningful experiences, and differentiates from a just fun destination. Again, this is not about being a party town. And it appeals to purposeful travelers because this brand is anchored in purpose. It's flexible, works for all of our tourism products, and allows for multiple interpretations, and again, can scale from intimate celebration all the way up to the big, massive ones. And it applies to all seasons and all segments. It's aspirational, but it's honest. It acknowledges intention without claiming perfection. It shows progress through joy and invites participation in becoming. This approach transforms our complexity into our competitive advantage. If you can think about celebration on purpose as sort of like the purpose of joy or the purpose in joy, the brand promise being that joy isn't just an emotion, it's an engine of change that every celebration shapes tomorrow. The strategic foundation here is that this direction positions Charlottesville and Albemarle County as an evolving destination where celebration actively creates community, transformation. Every festival, gathering, and every toast contributes to collective progress. So I'm not sure how many folks in this room are familiar with the concept of a brand anthem, but it just really helps sort of typify our approach of the fullness of the brand. This is very long, so pardon the fact that I'm just going to read this, but here's the brand anthem as we see the positioning of Celebrate on Purpose. Here, in Charlottesville and Albemarle County, every toast is a testament, every dance a declaration, every gathering a glimpse of the world we're creating together. We don't just throw parties, we throw open doors. We don't just pour wine, we pour possibility. We don't just make music, we make meaning. In the shadow of mountains that have witnessed it all, we choose to celebrate, not despite our struggles, but because of our strength. Here, celebration isn't escape, it's engagement. Joy isn't frivolous, it's fundamental. Purpose isn't preachy, it's playful. From sunrise hikes to sunset toasts, from harvest festivals to jazz-filled nights, from farmers markets to makerspace, every moment is a movement forward. This is Charlottesville, Albemarle County, where history meets hope at happy hour, where strangers become storytellers, where visitors become voices in our ever-evolving song. Come find your frequency, discover your community, add your verse, leave your mark. Because here, we know a secret. The best way to change the world is to celebrate the one you're building. Join us, celebrate what's next, celebrate on purpose. So, okay, class. So we can think about supporting messages for this idea of the purpose of joy or celebrate on purpose. If our universal promise under this brand position is that in Charlottesville, Albemarle County, joy isn't just an emotion, it's an engine of change, we can think about how we can relate that in potential messaging for culture seekers. Maybe it's where creativity catches fire and culture creates change. For wine enthusiasts, maybe it's sip with soul, swirl with purpose, and savor the revolution. For history buffs, yesterday's lessons launch tomorrow's celebrations. For outdoor adventures, peaks with purpose, trails of transformation. Now you see we've got transformation and revolution all on the same slide, and that is because can you think of a possible more revolutionary act than celebrating on purpose and with intention? It does not matter what happened yesterday, what's happening today, what might happen tomorrow. Today we are going to choose to celebrate. And so that's sort of the core of this brand. How does this work and sort of honor our BIPOC audiences? We have to always circle back to what we saw in terms of that 22-point belonging gap. I mean, these are our residents, these are our core, and this is how they feel. So how can this brand, although it is absolutely intended to drive tourism to the destination, how can it work to help our people simultaneously feel seen and heard, which will then make BIPOC residents feel seen, BIPOC visitors feel seen and heard as they consider a trip to the destination. So different experiences require different celebrations. Really helps with that 22-point belonging gap reflected in research, which proves that universal welcoming isn't authentic. And each group needs purposeful celebrations that speak to them. We saw Black respondents emphasize connected, which validates celebrations that create genuine bonds. So not just hospitality here, but community building. Connection over surface welcome. Authenticity matters to many BIPOC audiences, right? So higher authentic and inclusivity preferences among BIPOC audiences. We saw that on our previous slides. And so purposeful celebrations are more honest than performative welcome. And then we saw that big Hispanic emphasis on faith. So purposeful celebrations create safe spaces within those chosen groups. Safety through chosen community. Here's the bottom line. What we're working to build is a brand that is honest about what is, aspirational about what could be, and joyful about the journey in between those two spaces. Questions? All right. So we are going to get into what we think this might look like visually. But before we do the big reveal of these brand concepts, I first want to just, again, level set so we're all on the same page about what you're about to see. A brand, a logo concept, is an early design idea that shows one possible way that the brand could be represented visually. It's not just a sketch or a decoration, it's a creative interpretation of the brand strategy itself, so celebrate on purpose, distilled into a symbol, a word mark, or a combination of both. So you can think about it like that. The brand strategy is the big idea. Celebrate on purpose, that's what the brand stands for at its core. That's the brand strategy. The logo concepts are one visual expression of that idea. It's like a first attempt to show how this might look in its simplest, early form. So what you need to keep in mind here as you view these concepts in just a second is that a logo concept is not the final logo, and that each concept tells the brand story in a different way. So these all represent Celebrate on Purpose, but they come at that brand strategy from different angles. The chosen logo should anchor that broader identity of Celebrate on Purpose, and your role as stakeholders is to react to alignment. Yes, we care about whether you like these logos or not, but what we really want you to think about today is how well these logos that you're about to see represent the idea of Celebrate on Purpose and how well they will drive tourism to this destination. And so, yeah, let me not skip ahead. All right, now that we've framed that up, let's get into logo concept one.
Can I ask a question, process?
Please,
question.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So we've only seen one brand strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrate on Purpose. Did you see multiple and then you distilled it down to just the one that we're seeing today?
We saw...
I assume they deliver a couple different strategies.
Two.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we chose one.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
I found the buildup of the strategy and how they came to the conclusions to be really compelling. Looking back at the history of the last time the CACBB did something like this, I wasn't here. But it had immediate backlash from the community. And what I didn't want to have happen was that again. So trying to ground this in the community, also leveraging the research that we did with the Tourism Master Plan, and something that no other destination is doing. There are a lot of rinse and repeat brand concepts and directions that are out there in the destination world. We can all say we're whatever it is. We're the mountain destination. We're whatever. It's been very clear to me in the time that I've been here that we need to find a strategy that speaks to all of the different really powerful and attractive assets that we have here. And there isn't a great way of doing that that relies on one primary lure. And what I mean by that is all in on history, all in on wine, all in on outdoor recreation. We need to figure out what is the big concept that puts us all together in the same space. So the other concept was very close to this one, so they weren't all that, there wasn't like this huge gap that we chose a specific direction that was far off from what was presented. If we have discomfort about this presentation up to this point, then that's something we need to talk about now so we don't keep moving forward in this direction if this is a direction that the board is not comfortable moving forward with.
And so when we look at the logo, we're supposed to...
The logo is the manifestation of the overall strategy.
Correct, right. But that should give us a clue as to our brand, which is Celebrate on Purpose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted.
I'm kind of reserving judgment for the end, but I would like to have a conversation about what type of strategic and crisis comms planning there is in place, because this has every possibility of becoming a target and being painted as something that is woke. I am not talking about that being true. I'm talking about perception and what is happening in the larger discourse.
Yeah.
This, in my putting on my hat of doing this type of work for Monticello for 7 years, I have concerns about this going left and being used in a larger culture war. I'd be remiss if I did not bring this up.
Appreciated. So, I mean, that's why we're presenting it here. I will say that the stakeholders that we had in the room earlier today, I know are on
various ends of the extreme political spectrum, and I chose them that way on purpose.
Sure.
No one flagged it in the last room we were in, which doesn't mean it's not a legitimate concern. It just means it didn't come up in that conversation when we were together earlier.
Yeah, and I also was, the word celebrate is interesting. So to see how you guys changed wording in some of the messaging examples is really important for how we would carry it out, because when I think of targeting visitors and people that are going to travel, when I go on trips, I'm not, the word celebrate is not always in my mind as what I'm doing when I'm going to those places, but there's different words to how to change it so it's a meaningful, memory-lasting type of experience.
But also the marketing, messaging, and positioning helps us to, beyond the brand, helps us to position the idea of celebration as something that is intrinsically, could be any, celebrate anything, any day, any time.
Yeah.
And so this idea of, planting our flag as a place that celebration can happen in spontaneous moments, small, all the way up to big, I think resonates universally.
Sure, yeah. Can.
And there's so many brands that are visit, blah, stay, blah, discover, blah, explore. It's the same verbs are used over and over and over again. So I'm excited about doing it in a different way. I think making sure that when we bring the brand to life that it has so many different ways of celebrating, that we are showing that that shows up for us in a bunch of different ways is the way that... We were talking about this in the last conversation, how the CACB brings it to life. Because if we just let it hang out there, then it's going to be left open to interpretation. We don't yet have our brand pillars. We don't yet have our personas. So those things are going to help us narrow this down to have those focused communications. And we are working on the crisis communications plan for our organization overall. And I think being really intentional about that and taking that as a... something that we need to think really seriously about is important.
I think the on-purpose part is kind of what trips me up a bit. Celebrate should just feel like you're celebrating, but you have to do it on purpose. Like, it feels like you have to celebrate. I don't know. I think that's the part I'm stuck on, is the last two. Like, this is on. We're going to do this on purpose. It's like forced fun. And celebrate shouldn't feel forced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
we shouldn't feel forced.
There was a partner in the last conversation who said, if we don't celebrate the things as they happen, then we die. We've not celebrated. And I think that's, again, how we bring the brand to life, right? Like, it can feel, if you just hear that, then you're going to be like, well, come on now, lay off. Mm-hmm. But I think if we're showing that, we went out today because, like, our team goes and gets hot cheese at Guadalajara when we need to celebrate something on purpose. That is something that we do as part of our CACBB team culture. I think there are ways to bring that to life that feels not so aggressive, but I get where you're coming from. I also think the younger generations have trouble just letting go and having fun sometimes, and I think welcoming them in with this meaning, because we see that those Gen Z and millennial people in the workforce need to have meaning and connection to what they're doing, and I think we're carrying that over into the tourism world and how they experience what they're doing. It can be a really compelling message and not necessarily an aggressive message.
It's just kind of aggressive.
Yeah, yes.
I had that earlier, like, was it with purpose or
sounds like
purpose?
Me telling my kids, you're going to go to this and you're going to have fun. You're going to like it.
Yeah.
Which we do tell our kids.
Which we do tell our kids.
Just a couple thoughts. And this is really hard for me, honestly. I think you did a great job. I think I saw some things I really would love to study more. I think... what our community is feeling is really important. I made some notes because this one is tough. I mean, like, I agree on the importance of celebration of purpose, on celebration creating community. It's what we try to do within our business. It's bringing joy. It's a lot of what we're trying to do through our collective business. My gut is that this is too academic as a tourism brand. It's complicated. And this is just my view, but I think that people, again, this is very academic, philosophical. I think people want purpose and joy, and that takes us to far-flung places all across the world. But I don't think we go to any of those places because they're branded as a purpose place. I think there's something else about them that we then find purpose through. It feels like we're forcing it too much. I'm really curious to see what these, you know, what has been done with it. But I think people, what brings people places is there's so many choices out there, and I think people are more simple. I think people are very complex on the inside, but I think when they're looking out at all the different options, they're saying, I'm going to go to wine country, to Napa. I'm going to go to these beautiful mountains of Alaska. I'm going to go to Paris because, wow, the history and the beautiful city. And I don't think they're going to any of those places because the places are saying, come here, we're trying to affect change in the world. I think the people are going to these places wanting various things to affect change, to have a purposeful experience. I have a very hard time articulating this.
Yeah.
And I have to think a lot more about it to be able to articulate it. But this doesn't strike me as something that would get a lot of people to come visit.
I appreciate I'm having trouble collecting my thoughts around this, but I feel like what you just said resonated with me. That I think a lot of people have been going to Europe, and so you go to those European cities because you really want to see this specific thing that they have there. You have to go there, and you know when you go to Italy, wherever in Italy you choose, there's also great food, great wine, great people. You know, and so you know, like, I'm going for this one thing, but I'm going to have a great week. But there's a destination sort of in there.
Yes, there's like some kind of a platform that you know you're going to have all these things that will enable you to spend that special time with that special friend or to dive into something that you've never done before, but it's the purpose is coming with the person. It's not the destination necessarily.
Yeah. So I know we wanted to get to reveal, but I look at it a little bit different. I look at it as like maybe I'm looking at it just as one of those tourists that, you know, every once in a while I get an opportunity to go on a vacation, and I see this as like, okay, this community, they're going to have this event for me. They're going to have that event for me, and so I'm going to celebrate that. I didn't think about it as being woke, but I can see that as being the issue with everything that's going on. We have to think about that. Every decision we make now is like, how is it going to be viewed in Washington? Are they going to think we're a sanctuary city or whatever? It's unfortunate, but that's the environment that we're in. But I don't see that as, you know, just the way it was presented, and I know that it's 300 million people, whatever, in the United States, as being, you know, focused, but you're all into a lot more than I am. But I want to see what the hell you...
I know everybody wants to see them, but I have one. I have two quick thoughts as just a counterpoint. I'm trying not to overstate this, but I love it, and I think for two reasons. One, the differentiation aspect of it, like you said, like when you think of like Keep Austin Weird or What Happens in Vegas Stays in Vegas, right? Like there are those handful of things that like stick in your mind that you always think of when you think of that destination. And I think this has the potential to not just get lost in the noise in that way, where it is just stay or visit or whatever. And I'm assuming that was on purpose. the other thing, and this one's more personal to me, because we've tried really hard to figure out with the brands that we manage, like what is the unifying factor for everything that we do? And I somewhat tongue-in-cheek often tell people that like our goal is to help Charlottesville live up to its own hype in terms of some of the things that we do. And formally, this is never shared publicly, but like we have stated that the point of our brands is to create opportunities for joy. And I do think that there is something about that that resonates with people of like, the world is so serious all the time. Mm-hmm. and like it's so like divided and it's so political and it's like all of these things, and like I actually like that this breaks right through all of that and says like let's celebrate on purpose, like let's not have those moments be accidental, like it's not just the rainbow after the storm, it's not just the whatever, it's like let's choose to actually pursue that. And I love that that could be a thing that our town would be about, and I love that it's not about any one specific piece of that, right? Like it's something that there is something for everyone here, and I think that's the thing that we've always struggled with in some ways, and like I think that the all-encompassing aspect of it is actually really compelling. I haven't seen anything behind those things yet, but like the messaging to me feels really differentiated and very like potentially very clearly Charlottesville in a way that I love. So
that was the feedback over like for the most part from the focus group earlier today when they were thinking about it from their industry perspectives.
And I will say, one person made a comment when you see these, they said, well, why do we even have to have Albemarle? Because, you know, everyone says, even if you live in Albemarle, you say, oh, I live in, you know, Charlottesville when someone's outside the area. And so do we have to have Albemarle on there? I said, no, you don't, but if you want any funding, you do from the county.
That's not true, by the way. You're
mandating, right. But... Well, yeah. No. Yes, to a certain extent, but
city.
We do have some discretion, right? We do have some discretion.
All right, so let's get into these concepts. Pardon the reading again. I want to make sure I hit all my points because each one of these logo concepts that I'm about to reveal you don't have to break your neck.
Yeah.
They are all imbued deeply in meaning, and the art direction is intended, each element of these logo concepts is intended to bring celebrate on purpose together. So here is option one. Now this logo is most evocative of our current destination logo, but that is intentional. The script we chose for Charlottesville, paired with the strong block lettering for Albemarle County, visually represents the balance of joy and intention central to celebrate on purpose. The flourish of script conveys celebration and warmth, while the bold type anchors it in purpose and clarity. This is our view here that, you know, tradition meets progress. The contrast echoes the dual character of the region, historic charm, heritage, authenticity, paired with forward-looking momentum, innovation, education, inclusivity, creativity, growth. This mirrors feedback from our community survey where residents express pride in being both deeply rooted as well as ever evolving. This helps us to, we feel like, from social media avatars to highway signage, highly versatile, legible across mediums, and that script styling there introduces a sense of hospitality and welcome, connecting to culinary culture, boutique wineries, and the arts. Option two. This is our most abstract representation of our logo concepts. This is the symbolic emblem with star flower motif. The circular emblem you see here with the radiating star flower imagery for us conveys celebration, intentionality, and gathering. The symmetry and the movement suggest purpose-driven unity, echoing the brand's position of celebrating with intention rather than at random. The geometric design there resembles both a star, which is a nod, subtle nod, to Virginia's guiding role in American history, a flower, a connection to natural beauty and growth, our outdoor tourism anchors. And if you look closely, you can see a collection of people gathered around a table, which is a subtle nod to everyone having a seat. It mirrors values surfaced in community engagement, such as inclusivity, connection, and heritage, with the circle representing wholeness and belonging. This abstract, but we feel iconic symbol, works well across platforms, from merchandise to digital media, offering strong recognizability for visitors, and it positions the destination as a destination that is at once authentic, modern, and deeply rooted, appealing to travelers seeking cultural depth as well as those meaningful experiences. And as you see, this logo can be expressed two ways, both stacked and horizontally. Option three, this is our celebrate on purpose with our iconography logo. For us, this logo concept brings our brand position to life by layering universally recognizable symbols of celebration. Got the music note, the wine glass, the radiating sort of sunburst there over the wine glass. while also integrating energy and festivity into the visual, making the brand strategy feel immediate and actionable. You view this, you know exactly how to engage with the destination, what you should do when you get here. These icons, they represent Charlottesville, Albemarle County's tourism anchors, wine, culinary experiences, live music and festivals, and outdoor beauty, with the balance of icons emphasizing the inclusivity of different ways of celebrating, whether through nature, through culture, community-based events, or personal, everyday moments. We think this logo is highly flexible for storytelling across different platforms, and the icons, interestingly, can be broken out individually to spotlight wineries, music events, or scenic experiences. And it works well both promotionally and in wayfinding contexts, revealing sort of a literal like menu of experiences that reinforce the destination as a destination of joy, connection, and purposeful celebration. Last logo concept. This is our emblematic celebration badge. This logo concept brings the idea of celebration on purpose directly into the visual through symbolic icons. You got that rising sun there, the wine glass, the flourishing tree, those anchor tourism products of ours. And this approach explicitly connects the brand to moments of joy, cultural vibrancy, and natural beauty, which are intended pillars of the approved brand strategy. The sunrise starburst there in the middle signifies optimism, renewal, a shared joy, sort of a new day in the destination, while the wine glass in the mountains highlight some of the destination's tourism anchors. And, you know, this just works amazingly well, we think, as a badge, sort of a seal. We can almost stamp it on anything. And helps to really convey a sense of destination pride. We got that strong iconography, making it instantly recognizable across platforms, helping position the destination, the region, as a multifaceted destination for food, wine, culture, and outdoor recreation. Those are our four logo concepts, and now it is time for feedback. So we're going to have Anna here distribute a set of feedback cards. As you'll see, you should have four in each one of these piles, and as you'll see at the top of each one of these cards, you've got each logo concept. I'd like you to respond to the questions under each logo concept for that particular logo concept, and then fold them in half and drop them in the ballot box there on the table.
Coming around.
Can you just pass them down for me? That might be the most efficient. Thank you very much.
Oh. Yes, also I must note, guys, this is what happens when we print on purpose and
how are we doing?
Well, we
one more.
Right here, there seems to be a blank space here. It is supposed to say so purpose, but
they're
in black.
Packet.
We don't know what happens to the printing, but that's not like a write-in your own thing. It definitely should say purpose.
It's not Mad Libs, as I keep saying.
And also, could you mention the colors have been put in?
Oh, absolutely. These are all conveyed in black and white right now. This is not how the brand will be expressed once we have a chosen logo direction. We will conduct a color palette exploration that involves color psychology and all the things, so we can make sure we are anchoring these brands in a color palette that invokes the right sort of emotions when met by visitors. So what you see now is black and white because we don't want to get into a conversation about colors in here today. But they will not be expressed in black and white when finalized.
I have a question regarding the sun.
Yes, ma'am.
How did you come up with the sun as opposed to maybe a river? On both of them, which is emblematic of Albemarle, you know, with the river.
We went with the sunburst radiating for us is about leaning into that idea of celebration, especially here on over for the sort of the sunburst here, radiating energy celebration. But for this one here, which is a sunburst, but more of a sun itself, is supposed to invoke these feelings of this idea of the sun rising, almost like a new day, forward momentum in the destination.
Somebody grab me a pen. Sorry. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Consider
I'm usually on the other end of that conversation.
Okay, I just wanted to let everyone know we have no one from the public wishing to make a comment, which is good. I mean, well, it's just okay. Board announcements. I have one. I just spoke with Lauren, our attorney, and if it's okay with, if the board would like this, I think we want to have a special or virtual meeting online. For a special meeting or a regular meeting, then we have to have an ordinance for that. So if you like, I can add a policy for that. So I would like to have, if that's what the board decides to do, then we can have Lauren, who already has some policies, they're already written up for this, that we could present at the next meeting and then adopt it at the following meeting. Yes?
Just to give additional context on that, we will have to also invest in some additional technology to make that compliant with the rules around public meetings. So we'll also have to invest, which is not a big deal. I'm just letting you all know that there is a little bit of expense involved with making sure that we're compliant in that. Mm-hmm.
I mean, my druthers would be an in-person meeting, but there may be times that come up, and especially if we have to have a special meeting, it would be nice to be able to have that option so that everybody, because if you're in-state, you can, well, I guess out of state, too, you can also participate.
Are we talking about hybrid or in-person, or fully virtual?
Are you talking about hybrid?
I don't know.
Hybrid is expensive.
Hybrid
virtual
is
just a Zoom account,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, virtual.
Can we have it be either all virtual or all in-person and no hybrid? Is that a possible policy?
The county does that.
Yeah.
Oh, it does. Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I think I would have to...
Could you double-check that?
I think I could probably draft around that again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, cool. I was unaware that you could exclude the hybrid.
Okay. You have to go to a separate room with their computer.
Yeah?
Okay.
Or share a laptop.
I think it might be worth noting that we do get requests. We had somebody who couldn't make it today who would have participated virtually if there was a hybrid option. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be an assumption if we don't make it clear that if we can do it virtually or we can do it in person, that if you're not able to participate, you could participate virtually, which would then be a hybrid meeting.
Well,
yeah, so the county has like three tiers of, depending on what level of committee you are, is what you get access to, and there's 40 plus boards and commissions that are, it's either in person or virtual, never both.
Yeah.
So I have every confidence we can crack this nut.
I think mm-hmm. we can crack this nut. What do you all think?
Yes.
Yep.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Thank you for all speaking up. Appreciate that. Okay. Any other board announcements? Thank you for doing a great job, and thank you for your presentation. Your hard work is much appreciated. Okay. Thank you. We stand adjourned until our next meeting on
October 26th.
Okay.
Unless we call a meeting.
Unless we call a special meeting.
Yes.
Right.
We need to do that. If we're going to do that, we need to determine that quickly. October 3rd was the date, yes. Mm-hmm. So in order to keep us on our time frame to do that, we need to give 5 days notice for a public meeting, Lauren?
Ooh, I got to look at that.
Three days.
3 days?
Okay. Yeah.
So just know that there's a little bit of a process involved in that, and so I think it's good for us to determine if that's something that we want to do sooner than later, especially from the creative process side, so that we're not moving forward in a way that then the board would disrupt, or that we're making space for you all to do this in the right order so that we can include that in the process.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I noticed that a lot of people had comments, so would it be possible to, do we have to set the exact date or just say that we're going to have a special meeting?
So you need to pick the exact date of the special meeting. You don't have to pick the date until at least 3 days before and notice it.
Okay, so it would be nice to have the option, maybe depending on the kind of responses you received, and that would give you a little more heads up, we could look at that.
Can you explain the process from this point? Like, are y'all trying to pick one of these four and
Just to be clear, we should not be adjourned. We're not adjourned.
We're not adjourned.
Yeah. We're still having our meeting.
Yes.
To be clear.
Okay. Right. Thank you, Lauren.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Lauren.
What will the process look like between now and a final logo selection?
So we're going to look at all of the feedback that we got today, and then we're going to put it all together and present it again to Courtney and her team, and then collectively decide which logo contest resonated most and or which what iterations we need to, what changes we need to make to each one of these concepts based on feedback that we garnered today. And then stepping outside of that, not tomorrow, but Wednesday through the rest of the week, these logo concepts, be a much smaller, more mobile version. We'll tour around the community with the mobile visitor center so that we're able to kind of close the loop on the community. Like, we heard you engaged with either our community survey or in person, and this is where we ended up with the things that you told us. And so then we will also, as those logo concepts tour with the mobile visitor center, there's going to be a QR code beneath each one that allows the community to kind of scan and choose, you know, which ones they think resonate the most and bring the concept of celebrate on purpose to life the best. And so all of the feedback from today and then the community will put together, synthesize, present to Courtney, and, you know, essentially choose a way forward and then iterate that concept, the chosen concept, based upon the feedback. And then from there, it would be shooting our brand video to bring this idea to life and putting together the marketing campaign materials, the brand guidelines, color palettes, like I mentioned, brand pillars, audience, target audience personas, all of that kind of stuff. Just building out the remainder of the brand architecture and how we're going to bring it to life.
I'm going to offer also a clarifying point. We've already reached out to our website provider in terms of the lag time and the turnaround time and getting that refreshed in time for the winter, which is when we're hoping to launch. That's an 8 to 10 week process. So it's really important to us that we try to stick as closely to that November 3rd final rollout as we possibly can.
Can I just ask a question too? So are we, if we have another meeting, am I understanding correctly that the board doesn't have any input on what the branding is, only on the logo?
I mean, you can have whatever input you want on it. We just say we need to have that input soon. So, and we need to know what you want to provide feedback on so that we can make sure that we are doing this in within the timeline. So let's say that we take all of the information that we learned today and we take what we learned from the brand concepts going out with the Mobile Visitor Center. Amanda presents that to us. We have the feedback in a format that we share out to all of you. If at that point you're like, hey, this doesn't seem correct, if that triggers a board meeting conversation, we could do it at that juncture. If you want to see the brand concept, like the final logo concepts or two final logo concepts, we could have it at that juncture. It depends on what specifically you want to provide feedback on, and then we need to give it some structure so that we can get the feedback we need to be able to keep moving. Does that help?
What would be the most effective way to get you organized feedback on the messaging? Not the logo, but on the actual...
The tagline.
On the tagline. And from the other business owners.
I would say sooner than later on the tagline specifically, because that is the grounding of how we are moving forward. I think if you're talking about other business owners, are you proposing that we have a survey that we're opening up for that? The point of the focus group was to get a handful of stakeholders in the room from that perspective.
I think you would get, so as food and county food and beverage, I think letting those proprietors know what the messaging was will get a lot more input than just inviting them to come to an in-person discussion about our values. I think you would get every business within, I think most of the businesses that I, you know, like the Monticello Wine Show, I think everyone would give you input on this. And it may be that it's all really good input, but I think it'd be worth getting that input from a business perspective as opposed to just a community perspective.
Should we do that? That opens us up to all media coverage of this entire process. Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we had sought community input through these meetings and through the survey was so that we don't kind of get dragged through the messaging process later on down the road, which is where we are. So, like, from your perspective as our board members and representing the industry, if you're not comfortable with this, then let's take a pause and get your feedback. I am highly reluctant to put out a message to the community at large for them to give whatever input, uninformed or otherwise, to a marketing direction that we haven't even brought to life yet. That is just, to me, opening up an enormous can of worms and asking people to be negative about what they're going to bring to the table. There isn't a good way for me to just ask business owners of wineries. I think if we're going to do that, we have to open it up larger than that, and I don't know that that process is going to end up. We have to come up with something, right? So we need to be working towards a conclusion and not trying to pick apart what we currently have and start from the drawing board. Again, happy for your input, not necessarily large input. Yeah, Jen?
And I would totally support that, because unless this is ready to go public, we do not want it out. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't even think you want that deck out.
No.
I mean, if what you're really trying to get at, Athena, is concerns about the tagline, which I think this may be the very first time you and I have ever been not in total alignment, I do have concerns about the tagline, but I could not agree with you more that until we're ready to go live, any sort of like dribble of it opens her up to a really hard to navigate situation of like partial information out there that's not really ready. So I think I would totally agree with.
I just tend to differ. I'm on board with whatever y'all want, but I tend towards collaboration because I feel like more. I don't trust my own voice without. Thinking,
sure.
You know, I know what my gut is on it, but that doesn't mean it's different than Brad's. It might be different than other winery owners. It feels political to me, and everything about what I'm trying to do as a business is to engage the community with love and joy. As a business, I try to stay out of the politics. I want people to come in and feel comfortable and included. And that's the funny part about this, is that's what you guys want too. But I'm reading this differently, and it hits me a different way. Like, if I'm going out with my marketing team, I would never say, hey everybody, come to our winery.
But I think about
it's
when
hard
I go
to
your
explain.
Wine.
But
I think about
when
I go
you
to
come,
your wine.
You know we are about purpose.
And I think
and
about,
you know we are about
I have
joy.
Told people I go because, you know, your music bingo Sunday. I mean, that is just the most
people
fun
just thing. Come together.
And I think it's amazing. Like, I go there on purpose to celebrate the music bingo.
Right.
I go there on purpose for your, you know, I take a group with me on purpose to celebrate your crafter Sunday.
Yeah. But we're not wishing that to you. We're saying, come out for live music and food and great wine.
But
you're coming
opinion,
because
you
also happen to know. Like, there's these other stories. You know, we're trying to do this thing in the community or that, or we're women-owned. But we're not saying, come to us because we're women-owned and full stop.
And I don't think that says that. But that's just
perception. I have a feeling that there's going to be a significant number of business owners who feel like that's political.
The celebrate on purpose specifically?
Yes.
Can you explain that more? Because
I'm
not getting that read at all. Like, I felt like the welcoming, absolutely.
Yes.
Like, I was nervous when we were headed in that direction. You obviously chose not to go that way on purpose. Like, I actually felt like this was a counterpoint to that.
Interesting. Because to me, it's about celebrate. Celebrate love. Celebrate beauty. Not celebrate being an activist. To me, this says celebrate being an activist.
I think it has every possibility of being co-opted in that direction.
Right, and I am an activist. Like,
the only thing I feel strongly about is that it should not be celebrate with purpose, because I think that makes it even easier to suggest that this is a hyper-political activist. And again, how I feel in my real life is different than like this type of work that I do in terms of like crisis comms and stratcom. I think I know we're doing this, but I think 3 and 4 are safer because the visual grounds it in elements of our community, and I think that helps. I mean,
but I still want to say, like, celebrate love. Like, who can, like, that, like, to me is more than, and I'm not.
But that almost goes in a more political direction than
69,
this,
like,
right?
Sorry, yeah. Like, Woodstock? Maybe.
Not where my head was, but.
Okay. Yeah, I get what you mean. Like, and everything can become politicized. But
everything has been.
Everyone has that, but that's Charlottesville kind of has this this target on them, and
but we are gonna have that target regardless of whatever marketing campaign we choose, because we've had it on our backs for the past since 2017, guys.
Yeah.
It is a reality that I have to ground us in, and to me, this campaign is a response to that. We are going to keep celebrating here because of whatever else is out there. We don't, that is irrelevant.
We have a purpose.
Because we want to celebrate. Like, we want to celebrate despite anything else that is in the national media. We are trying to celebrate who we are and who we are on purpose. And if that is whatever political spectrum, whatever your belief system is, there are lots of events that happen here where they are not aligned with the liberal agenda. Right? So we have other things that are going on here that I think we could lean into.
And they celebrate on purpose.
And they celebrate on purpose. Yeah,
absolutely. I think we're prepared. I mean, like,
totally.
What does StratCom, like, what are the talking points? What is the response to the question? This seems political. Is that what this is? Like, what are we arming your spokespersons with?
Yeah. Hi. I also think there's opportunity to insert your purpose into the Celebrate on Purpose as a business owner. It could be celebrate wine on purpose. It could be celebrate coffee on purpose. It could be celebrate all of those things. So there's an opportunity there, but I could see. Okay.
I guess as a board member, I'm just hearing some, maybe not like a split board, we're not voting, but I'm hearing some strong opinions about reactions to what we have, and so just to affirm, maybe another meeting might be appropriate. So I was gonna
mention that. I think this is coming out and we're being hit with this, which is good. But then we're being asked to make a decision by the next meeting. We've got a very narrow timeline, which I don't think is fair, because I think there is a lot more, frankly, to discuss than even the logo itself. So, I mean, I do believe we need another meeting, because we just haven't really, in my opinion, had enough time to, absorb all this. I mean, what you were saying about each symbol, especially the abstract one, I did not see a flower. I did not see four people around a table. I mean, I thought that was, you're very creative. I'm not. I'm not going to see that. And so these resonate more with me, but I still think there could be some tweaking. I just think we probably need another meeting. And you know what? In reference to what you all have said, it is political. I mean, Charlottesville has gotten the brunt of everything since 2017. But Abomar, we're keeping our heads low. We'll keep trying to keep under the radar, because what's going on in the state, frankly, and D.C., funding is being cut, and it's not good, not fair, but that's the reality. When you say celebrate on purpose, I see that attracting the people that live here, coming together and celebrating. I don't see that phrase, just my opinion, bringing tourists in.
It does feel like an internal message, but
that's just me.
So what elements can, if assuming we're having another meeting between now and the end of October?
I just think the timeline, having just been through multiple of these things, it's an aggressive timeline to try and roll out a full new brand.
Mm-hmm. But we also didn't want to spend more than $100,000. So, I mean, I'm stuck with what we decided as a board was the right amount of money to spend on this project to make this happen, and that looks like a six-month project. So all of these things are a little bit in conflict with each other.
Very expensive to do this type of work, and you're doing it on a shoestring. So, I think for me, I'm totally down. It's the tagline that I get stuck on. I just can't get past that, and I just don't think they're ever gonna, like, you could make that symbol for number two real with a lot of money, right? You could make it, like, you could pay to raise awareness around something. I don't see us ever having the kind of money to do that, so that gives me some pause, only for, not for anything to do with the design element, but the money it would take to, rebrands are very expensive, because the other thing is that it's the rebrand, and then the paying to update everything that has that on that. Like, if we meant that for real, that should be, like, on every door, you know? And so that gives me some pause just for, like, logistical things. But in the larger sense, there's just something about celebrate on purpose that I just, you know. But we also, I do want to say, we have to give Courtney and her team the space to work, because doing this by committee, it is invariable that we will never have a unanimous, we all love it. It's just not going to happen. So we do need to give her the space to work. She is doing this on a shoestring and on a very aggressive timeline. And so it pains me to not just, I just feel like it'd be irresponsible to not flag. Yeah. So, and I don't know, it's not the word celebrate, I don't know. But I'm also not trying to upend your apple cart, and I'm sorry, it seems like that's what's happening.
Yeah. It's fine, I mean, yeah. we were trying to plan the board meetings at intervals that made sense.
Sure.
And this was the best we could do, because we only meet every other month. This is a 6-month project, right?
Yeah.
So, again, assuming that we have another board meeting, what can we put in front of you all at what juncture? We can't bring you back to do logo approval and then bring you back to do ad approval and then so what is the thing, or what are the two things that you all really want to revisit so we can plan accordingly? And if it is, we want to see, you know, a different tagline, then that's going to be like, hey, let's get together next week. If it is, we want to see logo concepts, that's going to be 2 to 3 weeks. If it's, we want to see you bring those ad concepts to life, it's going to be a little bit longer. So at what point do we want to revisit this conversation, and what conversation are we trying to have?
I think we all probably need a little more time to, like, live with this and read it and digest it a little bit more than just a hour, 15 minutes, let's roll, you know? Like, I need the deck. I probably need to see it and think a little bit more about it, not in this format, to, like I've got pause on certain things, but if I get into it a little bit more, I might go, oh, actually, I really get this and I like this. I just need, I think, for me, and I can't answer that question without a little more time.
Yeah, my concern is we weren't going to like anything that you put out there, no matter what it was. Like, not a bad way. Like, that's just how this process works. Like, nobody likes anything the first time they see it. I think the part that's also hard about this is, like, we all can't take the, like, we'll know it when we see it mentality, because that doesn't give them enough direction to actually do anything productive.
Yeah.
I think if there are specific, like, I honestly wasn't trying to argue against your perspective. I want to understand it, because I didn't have that reaction. And so I think it's helpful. Like, I think the feedback might be like, here's why that makes me think this, or here are the messaging concerns that I would have around that, because that's where I think you guys can actually take something and either respond to it with a defense of it or change something. But
how about you all send us whatever feedback that you feel like you need to send us in writing, please, by a week from today. Okay? And that'll be, I have hesitations about X, Y, or Z, or I really love X, Y, or Z, or I think I really want to see this specific part of what we're doing brought to life. And then I can take that feedback and consolidate that and go do a report back out to at least B and Russ, if not the entire board, to go, all right, 13 of 15 board members really want to have a conversation around X. So let's have that conversation and see if we have commonality around what we are really trying to hone. And that gives you all more time with the deck
Amanda will send me the deck today, and I will distribute it to you all today. I would love for one of you all as board members to reach out to any of the board members who aren't in the room today to say that you would like to have their feedback as well. I am obviously going to do that, but I think it's helpful for them to hear from you all that you would like their input too, since they weren't in the room. We will have the recording and we'll be able to get that information. So that'll give us a week from today, which puts us past the, it would be okay. It might delay us a week, but I think that would be
okay. So we all are holding hands here that we're potentially going to throw her off of schedule, and we're all going to hold hands that we did that as a collective decision, and she's not going to be on the line for it, like, on her own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just so we're all...
And we're going to have to pay more money,
right.
Most likely.
Yeah.
So just... And that's fine. I mean, I chose this process too. So like for what it's worth,
you're crashing it real fast though. Like, so I can appreciate how this has been a very accelerated timeline. Yeah.
We are stewards of this.
Yeah. Everybody's just trying to do
this,
the right thing.
Yeah. Of this organization.
Right.
If we feel like we'd rather spend more time, then I think that's responsible.
Yes.
100%. Is the word Charles, is that the current font? I just want very in the weeds question. Is that the current font?
No, it's up on the screen.
Yeah. It's similar, but it is not.
Here's the
actual.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I love the logo. I love the fourth logo. I love the logo. Yeah. So. Okay.
Well.
Noting once again at the sun, and we're looking at here at a river. So. But I've got an idea.
You can't put everything into
a
logo.
No. Take out the sun.
See,
that doesn't work.
There's a river between the two mountains.
No,
see it there? It's right there. Keep looking. You'll see it.
I'll keep looking.
Squint.
Okay, so by next, today's Monday. By next Monday.
Which is a holiday.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
so
for heaven's sake. Thank you.
Why don't we?
All right, Tuesday then.
Okay, by next Tuesday, we will have given, as a board, individually, we would have sent things to Courtney regarding the logo, regarding the messaging, which is currently celebrate on purpose.
You're going to send the whole deck, right?
We're going to send the whole deck.
The whole deck. Yeah. And then we'll give comments. Would you let me know who has not responded here today, who has not responded, so I can send them a friendly reminder?
By what time?
Okay, what's fair, guys?
Thursday?
Friday.
Thursday or Friday? Do we want to do it by Friday?
No.
No. We don't want to do it. Okay. All right. Okay, fine. Then by...
I'm going to give you by the end of the day Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think if people haven't responded by Friday, it's off their radar.
Okay. How's that? Is that fair? All right, so I'll send out reminders, and then, like I said, for the logo and for the branding.
Any feedback on the deck that gives you pause?
The deck is
all of the slides that we
have. All the slides, yeah. Got it.
I will also send the art direction that I walked everyone through in terms of, like, the why and how we approached each logo concept. So you'll have it all.
Okay.
And more specific is better, so that I can try and... figure out the best path forward. So if you know why you dislike something or why something gives you discomfort or what you want to see before you're going to feel comfortable moving forward, that specificity is going to help me figure out how to bring us back together to have the right conversation and not just a conversation.
Just to be clear legally, are we agreeing to a September meeting at this point, or we're waiting and seeing on the September meeting?
I think we're waiting and seeing.
Yeah.
But we should probably start
planning for it.
I think you're in an open meeting.
It's
get
harder.
Your date,
yeah.
Pick your date, and then if you don't need to use it, great.
Yeah.
And if you do need to use it, then Courtney just needs to get the notice up 3 days before, but the date is already picked. Yeah.
Okay, so our next meeting is October 27th, fourth Monday, and so what...
we're looking for a September date.
September or October?
Well, I think it matters.
It does matter.
Oh, okay.
They're trying to finalize the art by October 3rd.
Okay, well, what about September 15th?
A wonderful day. Mm-hmm. It's my birthday.
It's your birthday.
It's your birthday?
Oh,
we can
have a cake.
Yeah, we can have a cake or something on purpose. Does the 15th work?
I'm out of town, but you don't have to hold anything up.
It works for me.
Okay.
So the 15th is a city council meeting. I have a Java board meeting that day, too.
What time?
Java meets at noon, but I can leave there if we meet at 1, but I can't. It can't be a long meeting.
No. When's your council meeting?
It starts at 4.
Okay. We should be done, I would say, in an hour, because that would be our only business that day. What do you think? Hour and
a half.
Does the
hour include cake or not?
No
cake.
Pardon?
Does not include cake. There should be no cake involved.
Okay.
Maybe we should move to the 22nd.
Okay. Hour and 15 minutes. How's that?
Shouldn't have mentioned it.
Yeah,
pardon?
That sounds good.
Yeah. On the 15th.
Okay. On the 15th, 1 o'clock.
Hold that date.
Hold that date. If we cancel, then we cancel. If everyone, yeah. So that's September 15th at 1.
No cake.
Blue cake. Oh,
yeah. I also didn't introduce Rory. Rory is our new management analyst, and he is taking minutes. You will hear from him for this calendar invitation to hold on the calendars.
No cake.
And so Courtney needs to know about this
event. Just make sure that's in the minutes. No
cake. Did you all hear what Lauren said?
No. Courtney needs to know by the 10th of September if you want to use that in the year.
I'm sorry, what?
The 10th of September. Courtney needs to
know by the 10th of September.
We'll know by Tuesday, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, we'll know by Tuesday when everything's due. Whether or not we're going to do the 15th.
Great.
Now you may adjourn.
All right.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much for everything.